Walking onto a D1 men's college basketball team is no easy feat, especially if that team is one of the most successful teams in the history of college basketball and had also recently won their first national championship. Well, my guest on today's show, Ace Watanasuparp, beat the odds and walked onto the University of Connecticut's men's college basketball team, despite getting cut from the team two times previously. On today's show, Ace joins me to talk about his basketball career, his multi-year journey to making the UConn men's basketball team, his experience playing for the team for two seasons, the importance of having a winning mindset for an athlete, and much more. My interview with Ace Watanasuparp, coming up next. Asian American Athlete, the podcast that celebrates Asian American athletes. This is your host, Justin Hong, and on today's show, my guest is Ace Watanasuparp. While at the University of Connecticut, Ace became the first Asian American to ever walk on to the legendary UConn men's college basketball team, and eventually played on the team during his junior and senior years. Ace grew up in Queens and played basketball all 4 years at Bronx High School of Science. He's now a successful businessman and entrepreneur, building a tremendous career in banking, real estate, and other endeavors. He'll also be featured in an upcoming documentary on his personal journey called The Walk-On. Welcome to the show, Ace.
Oh, happy to be here, Justin. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you taking the time to be here. Right off the top, I wanted to congratulate you and the Huskies for winning another championship this last March Madness. It's what, the fifth title in the last 24 years?
Fifth title in 24 years, and it's definitely a program that I am super proud to be a part of, and it was just great to see Coach Hurley win his first one with us. So definitely happy for all the players, all the guys, good group of guys, and you know, I was actually able to see them in person.
So you went to the Final Four?
A lot of times they'll invite former players to come and support and be a part of that sort of bleed blue family, right?
Yeah.
So it's great.
And probably more to come, right? Because, I mean, next year is going to be one of the top teams in the nation again.
We're hoping. I mean, we lost Jackson, we lost Hawkins, and Sunoco, I think, declared for the draft. So we're losing three players this year. Which is great for them. But I think we have a pretty strong recruiting class as well coming in.
Yeah, awesome. Looking forward to talking more about UConn, your UConn years. But, you know, we want to, take a deep dive into your story, your background. Let's start with your backstory. Could you share a little bit about your family's background and where you grew up?
Yeah, of course. So my mom, my parents are both immigrants. They came to the United States, you know, with sort of that immigrant family story, right? Three jobs each, $100 in their pocket. My mom is from Taiwan. My dad is from Thailand. They met in Thailand. So I'm half Taiwanese, half Thai. And just grew up in the States and grew up in upstate New York, actually, and then moved over to New York City in Queens and just had a love. You know, my dad would always tell me since I was two, he would throw all these balls to see which one I would gravitate towards. And it's always been basketball. My dad was a huge sort of basketball fan as well. So he sort of had a basket in the garage, you know, just like in like the side of the house. And we'd be playing there every single day. So I have to thank my dad for really showing me the love of the game. And when I was younger, Justin, my dad would put me with the older kids, right? So when I was right around 6 years old, I would play with the seven-year-old folks at the school that we were at. So ever since, you know, I was in the sixth grade, fifth grade, I was playing on the sixth grade team. When I was on the sixth grade team, I was playing on the seventh grade team. So I never really understood why, because I couldn't really get a lot of playing time, because those kids, especially when you're younger, a year makes a big difference. So they're a lot bigger, a lot stronger. And, you know, I would be riding the bench a lot, but it taught me a lot about the game and how to really advance my skills at a young age playing with older kids, right? So my dad always tried to put me there. And luckily, you know, he trained me well enough that I could play with the older kids. And,
right.
and that's what I recommend a lot of our, a lot of the younger generation kids, right? A lot of times we play with our peers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for basketball, you have to be able to play with other folks that are maybe better in skill set, or maybe just bigger in mass and in size, right? So that was critical in terms of my upbringing as it pertains to basketball, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, awesome. So at what age did you start playing organized basketball?
Organized basketball, I would say in junior high school.
Okay.
Junior high school was my first exposure to organized basketball.
Okay. And was it a lot of, were you kind of training on your own and working with your dad, or was there other, from a skills development standpoint, did you work with personal trainers and those attend camps and those kind of things?
I think it was a lot different when I was growing up, Justin. I think today there's so many trainers.
Yeah.
You can get them anywhere, right? And there's so many videos in terms of self-trained. But for me, it was really training with my dad. He didn't really have the fundamentals to be training me back then. But my coach would also have practice outside of practice, right? And a lot of times they're not going to mandate that you go to these practices. So it's got to come within you, right? Mm. You have to really reach out to your coach and say, hey, coach, when can I get an extra session in? When can I get some time in, right? So those are the things that I would recommend, you know, any young kid or any high school student watching this podcast right now. No one's going to ever tell you this is what you need to do. You got to go out and seize the moment. You got to be proactive. And you got to tell your coach, hey, coach, do you have some extra time? Because a lot of times kids will wait for that opportunity or that sort of, you know, waiting for a coach to tell you, hey, you got to come to practice. But if you want to get better in this game, you got to go out on your own and you got to seek that attention and that training.
Yeah. What do you feel like motivated you to do that extra work? Like, did you have visions of playing college ball to play No. professionally? Like, yeah, I'm curious what drove you.
Yeah, not at all, Justin. I think it was just the will to just want to get better. I think I was a student of the game. I really wanted to get better, especially playing with older kids.
Mm.
It made me feel like my skill set wasn't good enough. And I always wanted to level up. So I went to a lot of basketball camps. You know, one thing that my dad did put me in was basketball camps. And basketball camps will teach you a really, really good amount of fundamentals that normally you wouldn't get just from being on a team, right? So they'll do drills with you. They'll teach you how to play the right defense. A lot of it is skills training, and it's in different facets, right? Mm. So basketball can last anywhere from 2 days to a week. So you're there at camp with all of your fellow peers, and you got some of the best coaches. So I went to McClancy basketball camp. I went to FDU, Fairleigh Dickinson University basketball camp. I went to five-star basketball camp in high school. So five-star is a camp that you're invited to. So that's a little bit different. But those type of camps definitely opened up my eyes, right? Sometimes you think you're good in your own town or your own city. You go to these camps and you're meeting kids from all over. And you're like, damn, I'm really not that good, right? So you come back that summer and now you're putting in the time and the work and the energy to just – look, it's about consistency and discipline.
Mm.
And one of the biggest things that camp taught me, more than the skill set itself, but discipline and consistency, right? Putting in the hours, putting in the time, repetition, everything in basketball is all about muscle memory. So,
right now, when you're doing all this training, going to these camps, are you the only Asian American in most of these camps and these places you're playing in, or did you see other Asian Americans there as well?
Back then, I was the only one, right? So it was tough not seeing someone like you or looking like you. But it also creates that sense of, you know, you can actually play with every single one of them, right? So it's one of those things where it's all about your perspective. You can look at it as, hey, I don't have anyone here that looks like me, or you can look at it as, hey, I'm a part of them, right?
Right.
And for me, I never really saw the color of my skin. I just felt like I was a part of the team, part of the camp, and I'm just one of the players.
Right, for sure. Let's talk about your high school years. So you attended Bronx High School of Science. You played on the basketball team there all 4 years. What was your experience like? Did you start right away as a freshman?
No, actually, my freshman year, I made it on the team. And basically I wasn't even a starter, but because I put in so much time and so much effort, outside of the game, and look, a lot of it is not on the court. I would study the plays. I would really sit down with the coach, get to know the players, really help, because my position was a point guard.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I had to make everyone better. So I would talk to the guys like, hey, what's your favorite position during the game? Let's practice you shooting jumpers there. You know, when I come down on a fast break, what do you like to be? Do you like to be on the wing? I'm going to lead you. So a lot of it was communication. By my sophomore year on the JV team, I became the captain. And that was tough, right? Because when they call you up, captains go up, they go to the middle of the court, you know, people would be yelling pork fried rice. Yeah, you know, at times it's tough, you know, beginning of the game, they're yelling pork fried rice to your captain, kind of makes your team kind of feel a little bit uneasy, right? So, but it was just one of those things where, you know, the biggest thing that I learned from being on the team at that young age is it wasn't about me. And a lot of kids today growing up in the game of basketball, a lot of it is just, you know, trying to score. How can I make the fanciest move, fanciest pass? There's so many Instagram reels that people are watching. And I think in basketball, the reason why I made it so far was I always stuck to the fundamentals.
Mm.
At that level, at that collegiate level, everybody can score. Probably 10x, 10 times better than you can. Everybody's dunking from the baseline, from the wing, mm. right? Us as Asian Americans, we have to be smarter. We got to really study the game. And how I got onto UConn and how I got onto my high school team was I played amazing defense,
mm.
right? Talent, you can't control talent sometimes. You can't control your physical God-given abilities or gifts. But what you can control that nobody can take away from you is your hustle.
Mm.
You can control is your defensive sort of mindset, beating your player to the team, studying your opponent, knowing what his strong hand, left, you know, weak hand is, right? And again, in AAU basketball, you're not going to be able to know that. But you have to be smart enough or just take a step back from the game and really analyze the game during the first half.
Right.
And I think when we're young, we just want to play basketball. And we develop these skills when we're older. But if you can develop it at a very young age and you can develop the skills in learning the game of basketball the right way, the fundamentals. And Justin, you asked about this, you know, what was my upbringing like?
Mm-hmm.
My dad was one and going to basketball camps, that was the other, right?
Right. What would you say was like your favorite highlight or favorite memory from your high school playing days?
My high school memory, wow, there was a lot. But not my favorite, but the most memorable was when my coach, this was varsity. I was captain at the time and we had just lost the game. And he said, Ace, you have to open up your eyes, you know? And he was like, Ace, you got to open up your chinky eyes, right? So that was actually a moment where, you know, I felt like, wow, this is real. Me being Asian American, playing basketball is real, you know? And coach didn't mean it. You know, I mean, it was a family, right? But it was so intense at the time. And he wanted us to all, you know, just get locked in that it just came out. The whole team was laughing and, you know, at the time I accepted it, but it made me realize that, hey, we have a long way to go in this game, right? But that was my most memorable because of the situation. But the best times that I had was celebrating wins with the team and celebrating losses, right? Losses, we took it as a team. And, you know, I still remember us taking the bus, taking the train home. You know, we're kids at the time. And when you lose, you take it to heart. But it's the moments when we bounce back and it's the moments where like we only believed in ourselves in that locker room, right? Like those are the moments that you cherish and that you bring with you, to life after basketball. Because there's going to be times where everybody writes you off. You're never celebrated until the result happens, meaning you're not celebrated until you win games, but that trial and that journey of you going to practice, putting in the hours, the sweat and tears that you put in to win the game and to win a playoff game and then win a championship. That's really, you know, what people should really embrace.
Right.
Sort of look forward to. But a lot of people hate the practice.
Right. Now, okay. So now at this time you're playing high school ball. At what point did you start thinking about playing in college? Or and also, were colleges, were you talking to any colleges about playing there? Yeah. Can you tell us about that process?
Yeah, I really wanted to play at the next level, and I was recruited by D3, D2 schools.
Okay.
If folks don't know what that means, there's Division 1, Division 2, and Division 3, right? Division 2 and Division 3 are lower sort of division, collegiate basketball divisions, and then Division 1 is like the big powerhouse team. So I wasn't recruited to Division 1, of course, because of my stature. And you have to be a scholarship player at the time. And I got scholarship offers to Brown University, Cornell, like all the typical sort of Ivy League schools, right? Because of academics and all that. But I always had a passion to go to a big time school. Now, I went to UConn not because I wanted to play on the basketball team. I went there for academics. My parents were huge in academics. But yes, to answer your question, Justin, I was recruited to a lot of D2, D3 schools, but I knew I didn't want to play ball for a D2, D3 school.
Mm-hmm.
When I went to UConn, I was playing at the field house, and some of the folks informed me about open tryouts.
They're
called walk-on tryouts.
Yeah.
It happens once during the year, and it's on a Saturday. Open tryouts to anyone that would want to try out in the whole entire school. So that day I went there, and there were about 360 kids.
This is your freshman year?
This is my freshman year.
Okay.
Yeah. So 360 kids, and I got cut my freshman year. I got cut my sophomore year, and I made it on my junior year. Right. So I can kind of go into that as well.
Yeah, definitely. We definitely want to unpack that. So one day of tryouts, how many roster spots are available for walk-ons?
One day of tryouts, and then they pick 10 from the 360 players.
Okay.
And it's a 3-month process that you're in the grade team.
Okay.
So you're in the grade team, and then now you're trying out. So now you're practicing. So now there's 10. So after 3 weeks, it's cut down to 5. Now you're on the practice squad. So now during scrimmages, during plays, they want to see the walk-ons give the scholarship players a hard time. Your defense, you got to understand, because at the end of the day, you're making the players better. Your job as a walk-on is to not only be a great teammate, but to continue to push the players to be at their best, right? So my job was lockdown defense.
Yeah.
You're going to go against the guards. You know, my job was to beat them to the spot and hopefully create a turnover. Right. So we were going at it every single day.
Right.
And that was my role. But it took 3 months of weight training. You do everything with the team. You know, if you're going to Cemetery Hill and you're running, you're running. If you're lifting weights at 5 a.m. and then lifting weights again at 4 p.m., then practice was twice a day. Workouts were twice a day. And then that was during the tryouts as well. Right. So you're on the grade team for about two to three months. And then they pick 2 players out of that, 10-man team. So 10 goes on to 5 and then goes on to 2.
Wow. Okay. So your freshman year, did you make it all the way down to like the, 5 players remaining, that level?
No. My freshman year, I was cut within the first team.
Oh, right? I see. Okay. And but you didn't give up. That's fascinating. So did you take it as like, okay, you know what? Learning experience. I'm still striving to make this team. I'm going to take what I learned from this experience this year. I'm going to continue to work and get better and be ready for sophomore year. Was that kind of your mentality?
So I got cut on the first squad, but one of the coaches pulled me aside. He's like, and I still remember Coach Moore. He said, Ace, you have potential, but you're way too small. You need to bulk up. You need to get some weight in. You're too skinny. At the time, I was 165, 5'9", 5'10". And he's like, you got to gain like 20 pounds. And he said, Ace, here, we want guys to facilitate and know the game. We're not interested if you can score. We want to see, but we see that in you. We want to see that next year. So I got that sort of tap on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, okay, I had to come back better, you know?
What did you do? So the remainder of your freshman year, what were you doing in terms of training and practicing? Were you like, was this every day you were working on your game?
Great question. So I would work out every single day. I went back home to New York and I would train. I came back my sophomore year. I got cut again, but this time I got cut at like the last sort of 20 folks during the day. And coach pulled me aside. He's like, "Ace, you got bigger, but we're still looking for more." So you know what I did, Justin? I actually said, "Okay, I'm not going to go back to New York. I'm staying at UConn." My parents are poor, had no money. I had to work at a mortgage company, and that's how I got into my finance career.
Right.
I had to work at a mortgage company, cold calling, to scrape dollars to stay up on campus, and I practiced with the team, Justin.
Oh, so, interesting. Okay.
So I wasn't invited to practice with the team, but I asked the team if I could just be there and be their ball boy.
Hmm.
So I created that opportunity, right? I said, "Look, you know, I'm a gym rat. I love ball. You know, I just want to help support you guys. If I can just get the rebounds for you guys, that's all I want to do." So from there, started getting the rebounds for the players.
Right.
With them during the summer, and they would get me into scrimmages with them. And I would just work on the plays. From there, I studied the plays.
Mm.
You know, I was passing the guys the ball. I got to know them. I knew a little bit about what coach wanted, because the main coaches aren't there during the summer. The assistant coaches are there.
Right.
So now I'm understanding the program a little bit better, what they're looking for.
Fascinating. Okay.
Junior year, I tried out again. This time, not only am I physically prepared, And mind you, I practiced, honed in on my skill set to the point where, like, I had an open shot. My mindset was, I'm knocking down all my shots, right? So your skills got to come with it. But there's so many Asian ball players that the skills are there. I see it. I see it in open gym, open run all the time, but it's the mindset. It's not there. That's where hopefully this podcast can really help the younger generation really focus on mentality, right? It's not about the skills that you have ever in basketball. It's always about what are you doing with those skills up here.
Mm.
It wasn't until my third time trying out, I actually understood, okay, Ace, your role on the team is not to score. Your role on the team is actually to help facilitate, number one, and move without the ball. Show them that you know the game of basketball and hustle your butt off, but hustle with intent.
Right.
So they're looking for, are you just hustling just for the sake of hustling and you have no purpose? Or are you hustling to, there's two types of hustling. There's hustling for your teammate, meaning you're screaming out, you know, there's a scream coming and you're hedging out, right? Mm-hmm. And you're giving your teammate that sort of 2 seconds to come back and play defense. Or are you communicating? Or are you telling them to switch, right? That's one type of hustle. The second hustle is beating your player to their spot, right? Beating the offensive player to the spot and knowing and not getting faked out by watching the ball. So you're watching his waist, right, the whole time. So these are the two type of things that are watched from the player, which is your acumen level, right? You understand what's going on, not only within your sort of realm, your defensive person that you have to take, but are you looking at the whole team, right?
Right.
So, yeah, and that's one of the things that you learn, right? Fast break. That's not your man. A lot of players, that's not my man. Nope. It's a team game. That's not your man. You get that person because you're the closest one there, right? That comes successful.
Right? For sure. And just to set the stage a little bit, this is a UConn team that had just won a national championship.
That's right.
Right? So, and they won, was it your freshman year?
My freshman year.
So this is big time college basketball. This is not you playing – you know, like on a fringe team or anything. This is a lot of NBA talent. You know, very recently, like the best team in the country that just won a national championship.
Richard Hamilton.
Yep. I still remember that. You guys beat Duke in the national championship game. And so this is a big time college basketball program. So you're in the mix here, developing relationships, not in working on your skills, working on your mentality. Okay, so walk us through like your junior year. When you ended up making the team, like what was that walk-on tryout process and what did it feel like to eventually make the team?
Oh man, my junior year, there was so many ups and downs in their process, right? During that tryout, everything clicked. You know, my passes, my shot, you know, my screens, everything was good. And then comes the three-month process, which was the first time I ever experienced it because I never made it that far. And there were times I wanted to quit because it's rough on the body, right? Mm-hmm. They're working out two plates at a time. And I'm 185 at the time, 5'9". I'm small. These weights are hard. And they would always complain. Oh, man, we have to switch the weights again for Ace? So one day I'm like, okay, we're not switching the weights. I'm doing the weights, but my body's breaking down. So mentally, I'm like, oh, like banged up. I have ice everywhere. And when you're going through those screens, you got to grow hard, right? So these guys are 7'6", sharpest elbows you'll ever find. And you're just running through trees every single day. It takes a toll on you mentally. And it was not fun anymore, Justin. It was a job, right? Something that I loved playing for, and the game that I love so much, just playing on the whim whenever you want to. This is now a job, right? You're getting up at 4 a.m. before class starts. You're working out, you're going to class, you're not skipping class, and then you're working out again. I asked myself so many times, is this what I want? And that process, for anyone that's ever been through it, it's not easy, right? So for those of us that love basketball as a passion, make sure you love it as a commitment.
Yeah.
Right. It's not a passion at that level, it's a job, right? And anything that you do in life, and that's why I carried it on to the business, but walking you through that year on when I made the team, you know, I just had a sense of just pride. And I wanted to show people that, hey, you know what? An Asian American can make it too. So I wasn't doing it for myself, just, I was doing it for everybody back home. And I just felt that if I can make it, then anything is possible. And I was right there, right? And I don't want to give up on that dream. And I never thought I would play at this level, let alone a championship team that just won the championship. And I was just right there, Justin. So I just didn't want to give up. And every practice, I'm the first to get there. I'm the last to get out. I'm diving on the floor on every single play, even when it's practice. So the coach just had no choice but to notice that the heart is where the soul is, you know?
Yeah.
And every day, I lay everything out on the line. Because I knew I wasn't as talented. I wasn't a scholarship player. But I knew that nobody was going to outwork me in that gym. And I think you have that mentality and you carry it through life, man, it's going to take you far.
Yeah.
So coach saw that out of the 10 folks. They're like, wow, you know, Ace. And during practice, I cheered my players on like there was no tomorrow, right? Like that's a teammate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how like, look, even though I was on the sidelines for most of the practice, you know, I'm clapping, I'm cheering, right? I'm helping some of the guards. When they're coming out, I'm not just watching and gazing off into the stars. I'm actually watching, what can I do to contribute to,
right?
So when they come off the court, I'm like kind of telling them, hey, you know what? This is what I saw. This is what you should be doing too. So just adding value at any point that I can.
What was that moment like when you found out you made the team?
Justin, I took off my shirt. My friends were waiting outside of the gym, and it's Gamble Pavilion. It's a big coliseum. And I just ran out. It was like euphoric, right?
Wow.
I didn't even believe my ears and my eyes. Like coaches, like, you know, the process is very, like, very emotional too, because there's five players.
Mm-hmm.
Coaches walk up to the player and they give you the jersey, right? So that moment, in my head, I was like, I'm not getting a jersey. You know, I gave it my best shot. But when they handed me that jersey, boy, Justin, man, like, I took off my shirt. I didn't even wear the jersey. I just ran out of the gym. The coach is like, what the hell is this guy doing? Ran out of the gym, went all out to all my family and friends. And it was just a moment of like all that, like, you know, the whole thing with the pork fried rice in high school, you know, being a captain, the coach saying, open up your eyes, you know, your chinky eyes. It was just like so the feeling was just indescribable, and it was just like tears of joy just started coming out, just coming down my eyes. And you know, it was like one of those moments where, wow, we finally made it, you know. And it was a memory I'll never forget.
That's incredible, man. Congratulations. That's
thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure the jubilation that you felt was immense. And I'm sure it was like, okay, practice next day, right?
But after that, I was like, all right, I got the jersey.
Yeah.
The real work starts now, right?
So. Yeah. Okay, so then what was that like in terms of, so then season starts, you're going to practice, now you're on the team. What was that experience like, specifically your junior year?
Oh, wow. It was just practice after practice, right? Not only are you practicing, there are times during practice we're not even touching a ball. It was just going through the plays, you know, that really taught me a lot about basketball, you know, school, academics. After that, basketball taught me life. You know, Coach Calhoun, he's a father figure.
Mm-hmm.
So calls me to check in on all his players. You know, it's amazing. You know, that man is special. And what he taught us was how to be a man in college, off and off, and off the court. And from that day forward, my junior year was, I understood basketball not for the sport, but for what it stood for. It stood for brothership.
Mm.
You know, it stood for family. You have to remember the recruits, you know, it came from all walks of life. We had Johnny Selby from Michigan, Flint, Michigan, one of the toughest parts. We had Karam Butler, Wisconsin Racine. We had Justin Brown from Australia, Suleiman Wan from Africa. We got all these players from all these different cultures, backgrounds, and to get them to become one unit, that's not easy. And you know, you have all these egos, and coach just said, you know, throw your egos. You're a McDonald's All-American. That doesn't mean anything in this gym. It's six, right? And he's like, playing time, don't even think about it. Playing time is going to be for those that earn it, not what you came from, not what your resume said, not what your championships or AAU trophies that you got. And everybody earned every single minute during practice. And it was something that I probably will never experience again. And that's why I bring that sort of mentality and that approach to the work environment.
Yeah, for sure.
That's why I've been so blessed to have a lot of good people around, because coach taught us that. Coach taught us that there is no I in team, truly.
Mm.
Right? And so that's what happened, Justin. You know, basketball was basketball, but the amount of practice that you put in, you know, we would be doing plays almost 100, 150 times, 180 times, 200 times until we got it so perfect. And coach did not let us move on from that drill until everybody from the scholarship player to the 16th man to myself, until we got it done.
Right. Do you remember what the experience was like the first time you played in a game?
Justin, my knees were going to buckle. I thought I was going to fall. I think I still have a clip when I first checked into the game.
What was the moment like? Who were you guys playing against?
We were playing against North Carolina.
Oh, wow. Okay.
we were blowing them out by 40 points. I think 38 points, 40 points. And coach looks down to the bench. And I'm just like looking at him. And I'm like, is this going to be the moment? And he's like, Ace. And then I was like, no way, right? So I was just sitting there. So he's like, Ace. I was like, me. So then I'm like so excited. I'm running to the scores table, and I could just hear the whole crowd erupting, Justin, right? And they were just like, Ace. It was like a Rudy chant.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And now I'm like, my heart's pounding, my knees buckling. I'm like, oh shoot, let's go. So then I get in. It was on ESPN too, Justin. And back then, ESPN was awesome. A big deal, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I get into the game. The whole crowd goes wild. You know, all the players know they're going to give me the ball. It's a play for me. You know, like looking back at the film, the commentators were all, you know, saying my name. It was insane. It was Mike Tirico was still the sportscaster back then. And he came up to me after the game. And he's like, son, you know, I'm proud of you. So it was a proud moment.
Wow.
That first time.
And back in those, I mean, we're seeing more Asian Americans play collegiately now, but back in those days, like, I don't recall hardly any.
I think I was one of the only Asian American walk-ons on the East Coast back then.
Yeah.
You know, so it was a big deal. It was almost like a folktale.
Right.
When I would come back home, literally, I would hear someone talking about, did you hear about that kid Ace that walked on? And I'm sitting right there. They don't know. No, I heard he was 6'4", 6'5". So it's funny to hear.
Yeah.
But it's also humbling to know that like you inspired. And at the time I didn't even know what type of movement or inspiration I was doing for the Asian community. Right?
Yeah.
I just felt like one of the players, and I was just like, oh yeah, you know, here's this 5'9" short guy making on the team, and I didn't know the impact of it all.
Right.
Looking back at it, I'm super proud of my heritage background, and you know, if I was able to trailblaze and sort of pave at least somewhat of a movement for the Asian community, you know, I'm super proud of that for sure.
Yeah. Amazing. Now, okay. And then going into your senior year, did you have to go through the entire walk-on process again, or were you kind of like, you were already on the team, you're on the team now, senior year?
Yeah, already on the team.
Okay.
Practicing in the summer. So senior year was just one of those years where, okay, you know, I've been part of this process. How do I help? Well, not necessarily. So as a walk-on, you just have to try out.
Yeah.
Again, but it's more of a formality.
Okay.
It's your spot to be taken away, right? So once you're there, you know, you better not let it, get it taken away. So that summer, my junior year, I just stayed with the team again,
mm-hmm. and
worked on working out the plays, and really just, I think the most important thing that a lot of kids or a lot of players take for granted is your conditioning.
Okay.
Well, your conditioning has got to be, you have got to have good conditioning. And that's the not so fun part, right? Everybody wants to play with the ball. They want to, like, you know, practice with the ball and all that. But, you know, one of the most toughest parts of being a team is being on the team is conditioning during the summer off season.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have a particular highlight that you recall from your senior year that was particularly memorable for you?
Oh, there was one time, there was a drill. And the drill was everybody grabbing the rebound, and then laying it up. But because the players are so talented, everybody was just straight up getting the ball, not even grabbing it down, boxing out, and laying it up. They were just dunking it, right? Uh-huh. So in my head, I'm like, man, I got to show up here. So at the time, I think I had my Reeboks on. So I'm like, I'm tidying it up. I'm like, I can't just grab it. Like after literally just everybody's grabbing it, like literally off the air and just dunking it right off the backboard. So I'm like, I got to try. And I've never dunked the ball before. I could grab rim. And
mm-hmm.
So I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was adrenaline or whatnot. I went up in the air, literally just caught the ball on the wing. And then the ball hit off the back iron off of the rebound. Right. So now I'm like, oh, I could dunk. So, the second time I go up again, I slipped and I almost get it. The third time I dunked it, right? And that was like
wow,
a defining moment. And it really showed me, like, your mind is like your biggest like impediment, because I had this limitation on myself that, you know what, I'm trying, I can't. But it's because I told myself I couldn't, right? And that's why, like, you know, and I had some crazy workouts too, Justin. I was working out with jump soles at the time.
Yep, I remember those.
I mean, you might be too young, Justin, but back then, you know, we had jump soles where it was like a heavy ball. You put on a platform.
Jump soles and strength shoes.
That's it. The weights, right? So I would do weight training with the ankles on the weights, and that all helped. But again, up here, it's so powerful. It's so powerful. So after that memorable practice, man, your boy was dunking. I throw balls off the floor now, grabbing it. You know, I try to find highlights, but you know, it's crazy.
Yeah,
so that was the most memorable.
Awesome. Did you consider pursuing like a professional career post college?
Yeah, I got hurt my senior year. I actually had a crack on my shin, and it became a benign tumor.
I had to
actually scrape it out and put artificial bone after my senior year. And that I never really fully recovered from that. You know, it really changed my mobility and my ability to, and it could have been all the years, stress fractures of like just jumping, putting on the weights, like I told you, right? So after I got my surgery, I was never able to really move the same. And that sort of hurt my my career in terms of advancing. But yeah, I got offers to play in Taiwan, a couple of small European teams at the time. But I think everything happens for a reason, Justin, man. You know, I wouldn't be where I am today in my career if that didn't happen.
Right, right.
basketball, but basketball for sure opened up so many different opportunities for me.
Yeah. You've had an amazing business career now as well. Can you share with the audience like what you're up to now, what you're up to these days?
Yeah. I mean, right now I'm in the process of going on the biggest journey of my career. I'm opening up my own bank. I'm starting up my own bank. So we just filed for the chartered license. We're licensed in 18 states. And there's a lot of regulation, a lot of compliance that comes with it. But it's been a lifelong dream of mine to open up my own bank. I've been in the finance industry now for the last 19 years. And this is just one of those, it's like UConn all over again. You know, I'm like that walk-on. Trying to learn as much as I can and trying to add value in an industry that I think needs more support and resources for an immigrant, right? And that's the reason why I'm creating this bank, because a lot of banks talk about helping the community and having products to help serve those type of communities, but they don't really gear it towards small businesses, self-employed borrowers. You know, sometimes like you look at our parents and they come and they don't have good credit and they don't have a long-standing history. These are the type of programs that I'm working on right now to really help our community as well.
Yeah, that's incredible. And then there's a documentary coming out here pretty soon about your personal story called The Walk-On. Yeah. Can you tell us, when's the release date? And can you tell us a little bit about what that project is about?
Yeah, the release date is next year. It's a story of my life. And it's a story of hardship, failures, and overcoming those challenges, right? And I think when you look at the word walk-on, it literally is a walk-on. Right? You're walking onto the team. You're not a scholarship player. You don't have the glitz and glamour of a scholarship player. And you're sort of unseen. You're sort of unknown, right? And I think all my life, I've always been that underdog.
Mm-hmm.
The movie really talks about that, you know, how I climbed the ranks of corporate and how in every step of my life and my career, even at the restaurants, today me and my cousin, we have about 12 restaurants. We have two concepts that are franchising now, but it wasn't always like that, right? We closed out 3 restaurants and we failed. And the moral of the movie is, you know, how many times you fail, you get up and you do it again. And hopefully you guys can all watch the movie. Hopefully it'll be inspiring for sure. But it talks about my lifelong journey of just going through the process. And even at UConn, my freshman year, I didn't make it because I showed up late too, because they told me that the tryouts was at another gym, Justin. So one of the facility managers at the field house told me that the tryouts was in the Armory building when it was at Gamble. So I got to Gamble late, and that was one of the reasons why I was the first one to get cut. I never shared that story, but in the movie, we talk about that. And I was so angry, but more disappointed at the time. I go back the next week and, you know, I'm like, did you not hear me? Did you like misinterpret, you know, that I wanted to go for the basketball tryouts? And he's like, Ace, are you serious? Look at you. You know, you're 5'9", you're Asian. Like, you weren't serious, right? So I just joked around. I didn't think you were serious, but you actually went to the Army building, you know? So it's just one of those things where in life, you're always going to have people that may not take you seriously, or they might not see what you're seeing, or they might not know what your intent is. And that's okay. I think it's okay, right? It's not their fault. But you have to know, like deep inside, you know, what you're trying to achieve. And you got to have that faith. And faith is huge. I can tell you in today's society, faith isn't always there. And it's either because you're surrounding yourself with, you know, not the right individuals, or you don't have a good support system. And, you know, I think that's critical, especially from growing up as young men, young women. You need that.
Awesome, Ace. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to jump on the show today. Thank you for inspiring Asian American athletes out there. Excited to see the documentary. Thank you for all that you've done, and best wishes on your future endeavors and your bank.
Oh, Justin, you're a stud. You're a gentleman. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Ace. And that wraps up this episode of the Asian American Athlete. To help support this podcast, please rate and review the show and subscribe to this podcast so that you know when the next episode is ready. See you all in the next episode.